The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I think we say Shavua Tov, right, Howard? I don't know. I'm very confused about what day we're on. I was expecting to hear Dina, and then I realized we've got Howard Saxteen tomorrow already, so it's all very confusing.
It's very confusing. Look, that's the thing about Monday being Shavuot in South Africa, is you spend the whole week being full of surprises, because every time you think it's Monday, it's Tuesday, and when it's Wednesday, you think it's just a mess. It's just a mess.
I know. We're also suffering the same thing, even though Shavuot was only one day for us, but it was Sunday, and so everybody came back to work yesterday thinking it was Sunday, and we're all over the place.
Right, exactly right. So is the situation in Israel. Palestinian sources have reported an outbreak of gunfire in Nablus overnight in an incident between IDF soldiers and Palestinian Authority security. What more is known about the incident, Anthony?
So not a lot really, Howard, because these reports that we've received, that we've been seeing in the press this morning, are all from Palestinian sources rather than something official from the IDF. And the IDF has actually not been saying anything at all, which kind of makes us wonder why it is that an incident like this is not being reported on at all by the IDF. And I presume they have their reasons for holding back on reporting whatever it is that went on last night. But according to the Palestinian sources, at least, it seems as if the IDF forces enter the building of the Palestinian security headquarters in Shechem, which is also known as Nablus, the same city, Shechem, Nablus. And apparently there was an exchange of fire with some of the security personnel that were inside that office. And, of course, from the Palestinian reports that we are receiving, you know, of course, the blame is being laid at the feet of the IDF soldiers, who they claim really should not have entered that building. And so there are some questions as to exactly why they entered the building in the first place, and of course why the gunfire broke out following their entry to that building. So I think we're going to still hear a lot more about this particular incident, which is highly unusual, and it apparently claimed a victim, in the sense that one of the Palestinian security personnel there was injured. And so we're not quite sure of his situation and what the state of his health is following that exchange of fire. But one has to assume that if the IDF soldiers purposefully surrounded a building and then entered into the building, that they must have had some reason to do so. And so it's just an interest for us to understand from the IDF sources exactly what went on there last night and why it was necessary for IDF soldiers to enter into that building. So we will still wait to hear more about this story.
And do you think it's unlikely that we will hear further?
I think we will hear something, because, of course, now it's out there. I think the IDF is being called upon really to comment about why it is that those soldiers would have entered the building. I don't think that this is going to go away without some sort of an official comment from the IDF or from the Israeli source.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to another subject, U.S. Ambassador to Israel David Friedman has caused controversy by remarks he made in an interview with a New York Times newspaper. What did he actually say?
Well, this is a very fascinating story, because this interview covered numerous different subjects. And, of course, David Friedman is something of a controversial figure, because the Arab side, the Palestinians in particular, are very opposed to him and the policies that he presents. And, of course, as a representative of the Trump administration, he and President Trump seem to see eye to eye very strongly on the issue of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and what should be done here in order to try to resolve it. And so he was holding this interview with the New York Times. And the words that he said were that when he was asked about the Israeli involvement in what we now commonly know as the West Bank, the Judea and Samaria area, he said the following. He said, under certain circumstances, I think Israel has the right to retain some, but unlikely all, of the West Bank. That was his comment. And so that has now been interpreted to mean that Israel has the right to annex parts of the West Bank. And of course, when we talk about the West Bank loosely, then of course all kinds of different connotations come to light. But people don't understand that East Jerusalem is part of the so-called West Bank, because that was really pieces of land that were not under Israel's control following the following the Declaration of Independence right up until 1967, Six-Day War. That land was really under Jordanian control. So one could theoretically argue that what David Friedman said has a lot of credit, has a lot of validity, because Israel, we feel, has the right to retain, for example, the Temple Mount and bits of East Jerusalem. And there is also discussion, by the way, about Israel retaining parts of Judea and Samaria, parts of the West Bank, which have significant populations of Jews, for example, Ariel, and for example, Maale Adumim, and for example, Gush Etzion. These are places where a lot of Jews are living. They have established themselves there, and a future Palestinian state has made quite clear, or the Palestinian Authority has made it quite clear, that a future Palestinian state would not tolerate Jews living in it. So therefore, the choice is either that those pieces of land where those Jews are living in significant numbers either have to be completely evacuated, which is controversial in and of its own right, or they have to be somehow incorporated into Israel, and the so-called land swaps arrangement would come into existence, which has been long spoken about. So this is already not a new issue. Mm. But of course, the Palestinians have taken up this issue, this comment that was made by David Friedman, and really made a meal out of it, and said that they're weighing up whether his racist rhetoric was grounds to file a complaint with the International Criminal Court. I mean, this is really taking things to an extreme, which I think is unjustified. And it's noticeable that, you know, in David Friedman's comments, he never used the word annex, nor used the words, you know, unilateral, or didn't suggest at all that this wasn't going to be something that would have been done without agreement. Mm. So I think that this is really just taking the words that he uttered and making a meal out of it, in order to try and keep that on the agenda, to try and keep some pressure on the Trump administration, and of course on David Friedman himself, who has in the past been called the son of a dog by the Palestinian Authority leadership. So obviously they have some issue with him personally, in addition to the fact that he represents the Trump administration, which they don't particularly like. So this was really a huge mountain out of a molehill, I would say. And it's interesting that the White House has not come out to in any way distance itself from Friedman's comments or anything like that. So he seems very much to have the support of the White House. They haven't necessarily come out to support what he said, but they haven't asked him to withdraw the statements, and they haven't come out to defend them. So I think that this is just a classic case of taking words as they were and really twisting them into what you think you want to hear, in order to keep the storyline in the public domain.
It was interesting because I read it, and I was wondering what on earth could have been wrong in the statement, because it really has been very, very clear, even on the Palestinian side, that, as you say, areas like Gush Etzion, that will be part of a negotiation where certain areas will be retained by Israel, other areas given over, where Jews are not living, etc. So it's certainly,
I mean, this is the land swaps, what we loosely call land swaps, which has been discussed for a very long time already, because I think the Palestinian Authority understands that Gush Etzion, Maale Adumim, Ariel, and perhaps some other areas are not going to be evacuated in the event that some sort of a peace arrangement is reached. And therefore, we're going to have to find a way somehow to incorporate those parts into Israel. And in exchange for that, the Palestinians would receive pieces of land which also were not previously considered to be part of the Palestinian Authority area. So that's what the whole land swaps arrangement is about.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievable. Anthony, an 8-year-old Israeli chess prodigy has won second place in the European Schools Championship in Romania. How strong is school chess in Israel?
So school chess is pretty strong in Israel. And of course, this is borne out by 8-year-old chess prodigy Or Shatil, who won second place in the European School Chess Championships. And if you take into consideration, I mean, obviously she fits the bill. She's a chess player and she's a school child and all the rest of it. But I would imagine that she would not be the oldest and the most experienced chess player at the School Chess Championships. And in fact, she defeated a player from Azerbaijan, whose name is almost unpronounceable, who was undefeated until that particular moment. And, you know, from what I've read from the reports, it seems as if though he probably was a lot older and a lot more mature than she was. So this is an astonishing young girl who has really done very well for Israel and does actually represent what's going on in the schools in Israel, because what we saw during the 1980s when we had the huge influx, the huge aliyah from the former Soviet Union, is that a lot of chess ability was brought in during that time. Some of the grandmasters of chess made aliyah, came to live in Israel. And they have had to find their way to make a living and to show their art to other Israelis. And what a lot of them have been doing is going to schools and teaching children how to play chess. And you see that so strongly in Israeli schools, where chess is a very big thing. A lot of the children are playing chess and they're being trained by some of the best chess brains in the world. Some people who are, you know, grandmasters and have been, you know, really playing at the most senior level in the world from all these chess players. And so we see this a lot with Israeli school children coming out and doing very well in the chess world. And of course, a lot of reports about Israeli chess players being refused to be able to play against opponents from Iran. There have been a number of different stories where Iranian players refused to play against Israeli players over the past few years, even when big money was up for grabs. And in fact, only earlier this year, a 17-year-old Iranian was actually invited to meet with the supreme leader because he was being praised for not being willing to or refusing to play against an Israeli player. So Israeli players are definitely out there in the international community. And young Or Shatil has really brought a lot of credit to Israeli chess and to school chess in particular, which I think is very strong in Israel. So this is a fascinating story, and we hope that she will go on to do really great amazing things in the chess world, and, you know, show off Israeli chess as it should be shown off.
Absolutely, absolutely fantastic. Prime Minister, finally, we have done up a lot of time, but Prime Minister Netanyahu's legal team have been working to convince the Attorney General to further postpone the legal hearings concerning the accusations of fraud against the Prime Minister. Why are they trying to further postpone the hearing?
Okay, so this is going to be an ongoing story, Howard, and we're going to have to talk about this a lot, I suspect, over the coming months as we lead up both to the general election and, of course, to the date that has been set for the hearing. The date that has been set for the hearing was originally in July, and then it was postponed until October, which now happens to be just before the new date for the general election. And so therefore the legal team of the Prime Minister said, as a result of the general election pressures and as a result of the volume of documents that have to be considered, which was really the first argument that they used to postpone the date from July until October, they would like to request a further postponement of the hearing. And of course, the cynics, or the cynical commentators are saying the result of postponing the hearing is that it gives the Prime Minister the opportunity to form a new government and then to put this law into place, which could potentially prevent him from being prosecuted as a result of the new law. So that's really where the cynical comment is coming from, and there may well be some truth to that aspect. The Prime Minister is struggling a lot with his legal team. He's had to appoint new lawyers. His previous lawyers have resigned because apparently they weren't being paid. They weren't being paid apparently because the Attorney General had said that the lawyers cannot be paid by money that was donated to the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister is being held up for fraudulent activities involving donations coming from some of these people. So it's really a big mixing mess with all of these things really affecting each other. But ultimately, there is a consideration, apparently, that the Prime Minister's legal team may even go to the appeal court, to the High Court of Justice, to try to force the Attorney General, Avichai Mandelblit, to postpone the hearing to beyond the beginning of October date. I would like to think that the High Court would not uphold such an appeal, but it's going to be interesting to see. And as I say, the story is going to roll for some time yet.
Absolutely right. And certainly we'll keep covering it to see where this one goes. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll chat to you same time, same place tomorrow. It is 8 o'clock. Here's your news with Zanati.